You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Tech Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Andrew McComb. When was the last time your mobile phone contract was up and it was time to renew? Life's just cruisy as you indulge your senses with the latest Blu-ray release on your 60-inch LCD monitor hanging in the middle of your living room, while you subtly let your neighbours know about your swanky new 5.1 surround system as you jump on your 802.11n wirelessly connected laptop to see what your mates are up to on Facebook. Then, all of a sudden, you realise you have to make a decision that commits you to a telco for the next 12 or 24 months, which seems like an eternity when it comes to progressive mobile technology. And as a result, you gradually work up a sweat while closing off Facebook and YouTube and opening up your telco's website to try and make head or tail out of what they've got on offer. It's a dilemma that I've just recently faced, only I don't have a Blu-ray player or a 60-inch LCD or much of any of the other stuff I mentioned earlier. Instead, I thought I had a reasonable handle on what these telcos were doing and how they were going to sell it, until I opened up the plethora of telco websites and took a look at the new electronic gadgets designed to make our lives more communicative. It was time to break free of the contracts the phone companies had on offer. So I embraced the world of contractless mobile communications. And I'll tell you all about the pros and cons later on today's show.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Lydia Davis joins us from Silicon Valley to tell us about Delicious. Dr. Ron tells of the perils of the laptop serviceman. Infected Australian computers fetch top dollar. Melbourne IT try new anti-spam technology. Perth and Google meet on the buses, and Adam Turner shares his view from the couch. First up, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Sony Corporation under investigation over alleged Blu-ray patent infringements. Hackers pay top dollar for infected Australian computers. Music labels are pressuring Apple for iTunes subscription service. Mobile phones can now be used flying Emirates. And astronauts return to the International Space Station after a successful spacewalk. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The United States International Trade Commission has announced it will launch an investigation into possible patent infringements involving Sony's Blu-ray high-definition disc players. The announcement came after allegations of patent infringements were made by a university professor from Columbia. The ITC said on its website last week that the products involved are short-wavelength light-emitting diodes and laser diodes used in such electronics as high-definition DVD players, and that the probe is set to investigate some 30 companies, including Sony, for alleged breaches. A Sony spokesperson said the company was unable to comment as the investigation had not yet concluded. An Australian internet security firm believes that hackers are paying top dollar on international black markets for local computers infected with spyware. According to Message Labs, an internet security organisation, at least one malware distribution site in Russia is offering $100 per 1,000 infected Australian machines, which is double the price offered for US machines and 30 times more than those from Asia. Message Labs product marketing manager for Australia New Zealand, Philip Routley, told The Age Tech last week that the high price tag on Australian machines was due to the fact that Australians were more ignorant about computer security threats than people from other parts of the world. The malware site in question, Installs Cache, offers to pay unscrupulous webmasters for every 1,000 machines they infect with spyware. By inserting a line of code into their web page, webmasters can ensure that anyone visiting the site will be infected with spyware. Machines infected with spyware can then function as part of a botnet or zombie network and can then be used in denial of service attacks or spam distribution without the knowledge of the legitimate owner. Mr. Routley reminded Australians to regularly check that their security software is up to date and to run regular scans for spyware and other malware. Apple is reportedly negotiating with music companies to give customers free access to their entire iTunes music library in exchange for a premium on iPhones and iPod music players. According to the London Financial Times, the new business model would provide a much-needed boost for the struggling recorded music industry, which is suffering at the hands of illegal music distribution through peer-to-peer file-sharing networks. While talks between Apple and record companies like Universal Music, Sony BMG and EMI have been ongoing for nearly a year now, there has been an increased impetus in recent months, as predictions suggest global music sales will fall to $23 billion next year, down 16% from 2008. The business model would be a replica of Nokia's Comes With Music deal, where the handset manufacturer is believed to pay almost $80 per handset to music industry partners. Apple is also understood to be examining a subscription model that would work only for its iPhone devices. The last bastion of mobile-free serenity inside an aeroplane may soon be a thing of the past. The BBC reports that Dubai-based airline Emirates has become the first commercial airline to allow passengers to make mobile phone calls during flights. Emirates said the first permitted mobile phone call was made on a flight between Dubai and Casablanca in an Airbus A340. The aircraft has been fitted with a system to stop mobiles from interfering with the plane's electronics. According to Emirates, the service will only be activated when the aircraft is at cruising altitude, and cabin crew will be able to monitor and control the use of the system. Passengers will be able to receive and send text messages, but the crew will be able to prevent voice calls at certain times, such as during night flights. Emirates said it decided to introduce the use of mobile phones after experiencing high demand for phones already installed in aircraft seats. And two astronauts have returned to the International Space Station after a successful spacewalk. New repair techniques were assessed for the heat shields used on NASA's space shuttles. In testing the new heat shield repair method, NASA was preparing for any potential damage to the upcoming Hubble mission on the 28th of August. Last week's spacewalk was the fourth of five for the Endeavour mission, which is tasked with the installation of a Japanese laboratory and the assembly of a Canadian robot. Endeavour crew members will conduct a final spacewalk on Saturday before returning to Earth on the 26th of March. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
The government's going to commit $95 million to regional broadband.
I'm intensely interested because this is what people like me are going to be working with into the next little while.
A lot of people have tried to compete with the Apple iPod, and some have done well and some have done not so well.
Who would use Windows Server 2008, Andrew?
Oklahoma.
Where the wind comes sweeping around the plane.
The feedback that we got was, you know, if you're not going to use those, why have them on the server?
I'm one of those people that's bad at doing backups, actually.
14 days out, they start going, hey, buddy, click this box here, you got update.
How do you pay for this stuff?
I don't know. With blood.
With blood. There's got to be a better way to make toast.
There does.
This is the dilemma that the antivirus software people have got.
Dog ate my record card. I don't know.
Oh, don't talk to me about that.
Connected your telephone lines, I'm sorry.
They jumped over it.
They did.
They did the triple jump.
With gay abandon.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I had iTunes running today.
Did you? I did too.
Yeah.
That's quite an achievement.
Sorry.
Oh, dear.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Here we are. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron. Having a fairly quiet evening this evening in the studio. How's things, Dr. Ron, over there? Your lights are down.
Things are going well. It's like the good old days, isn't it?
It is.
It's just you and me. A
couple of years back, everyone else is having holidays.
Romantic lighting, just the two of us.
Yes, a little... yes. For those of you who aren't aware, it's in the darkness now when we do our radio show. And, the MCG turns on here. That's the Melbourne Cricket Ground down the road. And it's like, have to bring the sunnies in. But anyway, we're here. We're live.
Studio's very bright, isn't it? We opt for the low light method of doing things.
Yes, we have a lovely new studio here at the moment. It's wonderful. Everything just works. It's great. Anyway, yes, interesting week. I've had some interesting...
Happy Easter.
Yes, and for those of you listening down the other end of the week, Easter was a while back.
It was. I bought in the special Humpty Dumpty Easter eggs for us here too. So
it's fantastic. Thanks, Lainey.
There we are. We can have them during the break.
Yeah, too right.
Yes.
It's been an interesting week. I've been a couple of rounds with Telstra. And you've been a couple of rounds with the service repair guy, I sort of hear.
Got some good stories tonight, haven't we?
We'll get into that in just a sec.
Good worries.
Absolutely. Another bit of interesting news. You were recognised with your sunglasses on sitting in a Melbourne restaurant recently, I heard. You, someone recognised you as Dr. Ron. And that's not bad for radio, I wouldn't have thought.
It was a rather unnerving experience. Yes, I was out with my good lady wife. We're celebrating her birthday at a restaurant in town. And I had a tall, dark stranger walk up to me and say, "Hello, Dr. Ron," but he wasn't really a stranger. It was really Mr. Brett De Hoot, who's a long-time friend and supporter of the program.
Absolutely. Been on the show probably 2 or 3 years back. I've tried getting him on again. He keeps saying, "Oh, I'm really busy."
Oh, we're all busy, Brett. Come on. You can do it.
Right.
He used to have his own radio program on AK back in the good old days
in
Melbourne.
He might be back on the radio again, too. There's
a
rumour.
Really? That's
There's
a good rumour.
There's a rumour. Yeah, watch this space. Very good. Yes, it's tap on the shoulder like that can be quite daunting.
It was quite a surprise, I've got to say.
Dear. Now, the email went out this morning, and with a few interesting things about what we're going to be talking about tonight. And already we've had some feedback in relation to Telstra.
Good.
And mobile phones and Optuses and all that sort of stuff.
Hello, GD as well. He sent us some feedback saying that the streams are working, which is great news.
Yes, you can tell Dr. Ron's on holidays. He sounds a lot different too, doesn't he?
Do I sound in a good way or a bad? Or coherence?
Coherent?
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, my body was here, but my mind was in another place, wasn't it?
Yes, that's about right. Yes. Mm. But anyway, welcome to Lee Todd and James Gardner, two new sign-upperees, I guess.
Hi, guys.
New... All you Butte singing, dancing newsletter that goes out. We have a newsletter which has a bit about what's on tonight's show, some click-throughs and links, and also some stories that we watch on a regular basis, things that interest us. May not necessarily be what we talk about on the show, but they're proving to be quite popular. People are clicking them just for a bit of a read-up and see what's going on. So
that's good. So people are clicking through those links on the email.
That's right. So come to our website at techtalkradio.com.au. The right-hand side, about halfway down, you'll see a little place there where you can click to subscribe. Put in your details there, and I'll later on I'll even tell you who the first person was who opened the email up this morning. So when it went out, we should have a competition, announce the new people coming to the show, coming to the newsletter.
And we should, but we usually welcome the new forum members. So if you're not a forum member, go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au, register there. You can participate in discussion of the show, the content on the show, and you can create your own discussion threads as well if you'd like to.
Absolutely. All right. I'm with the show, I think. Just starting off, I was interested to note that Patch Tuesday came and went recently. That's a Microsoft Patch Tuesday where they choose to monthly send out a whole heap of little patches and fixes for your Windows installation. They forgot one, I think.
Oh.
Microsoft has broken with its normal monthly patch release cycle to rush out an update for an Excel bug introduced by one of March's security fixes.
Oh, dear.
So that's, I rest my case. New software, they just fix all the old bugs, give you a whole heap of new bugs, and then they have to fix them the following month. So, everyone does it. So,
does it say what version of Excel, Andrew, or is it just...
One of last week's Patch Tuesday security patches for Microsoft Office had a side effect of causing calculation errors. Well, can't be happy about that.
No, that's sort of a fundamental part of Excel. You hope that it calculates things correctly.
In Excel 2003, spreadsheets that use real-time data sources... in user-created Visual Basic for applications functions. So there you go. It didn't pull the VB portion of it, which is a scripting code where you can pull external applications and data in from those sort of things in real time. Didn't quite handle page. So there you go. If you're a Windows user of Excel 2003, might pay just to go and click that magic little button that says, what does it say? I haven't clicked it for a while. It does it all for me.
Double check your updates.
Windows updates or something, isn't it?
Yeah, also check your Office updates. Office updates are different to the Windows updates, so you need to check both. The best way to do that probably is, the way I would do it, go to the Microsoft website. Graham, who's not here tonight, he'll usually tell you to find it a different way. But I think I go to support.microsoft.com. That is just one that I remember in the back of my mind. It usually lands you in pretty much the right place.
Yeah.
And you need to look at not only Windows updates, but Office updates as well to make sure you've got the most current patch.
Yes, it pays to stay up to date. Let's talk about...
Where is Graham tonight, by the way?
Oh, he's... I don't know. I thought you knew. Where was he? Up in the mountain something, being a lumberjack or something?
He is being a lumberjack. He's participating in another radio venture, which has been around for many, many years, that I used to help him out with.
Excellent.
He does that every field Easter. Work. Every
like
year. He is
that.
Doing field work. Field That's what work. He's doing. He's having a ball, too.
He can tell us about it when he comes in next.
He will. He'll be back next week.
Do you use anything on Melbourne IT, which is now Web Central?
No, I don't.
Melbourne IT is probably one of the very first agencies to allow you to register a domain name in the .com.au namespace. They also bought out, or Web Central bought them out. I can't remember which way it happened, but anyway, they're one and the same entity
these
days.
They used to be the only one, didn't they, before it was all deregulated sort of thing.
And they're still charging the prices if they are the only one too, just quietly, but that's another story.
That's another story. They do offer a good service, though, good help desk and telephone support.
So they do?
You have to weigh up whether you want to save some cash or you want the instant technical support access.
Well, over $100 for a domain name, when you think about it, you can pick them up for under $50 is, yeah, that's if that's what you want to buy.
It's a bit pricey, but weigh up all your options.
So anyway, one of these guys, Melbourne IT, have selected CloudMark Authority from a local distributor, eCorner, to protect Melbourne IT email subscribers from messaging abuse, which is really good because the spam is just getting a bit out of control again. Now, you come in here and you log on, and even with all the latest and greatest things, you still manage to get the few one-liners come in, and they're doing just simple text things in a URL now. Don't click them. For goodness sakes, don't click them. If everyone didn't click them, then we wouldn't have spam, would we?
That's right.
But, apparently Melbourne IT have said, no, enough's enough, and they're going to go to the next level, and these guys, CloudMark Authority, have actually given them software or something, which goes on their systems, which they're now going to roll out for all their customers, which I assume would be through Web Central. So
interesting.
Because it is a problem. There's more, 90+% of all email traffic that goes around the planet is spam.
That's right. It's going to get to the
bandwidth.
Point. Yeah, exactly. It's going to get to the point whereby email does become unusable, I think. And I think that's that day is fast approaching. It's going to hit us sooner rather than later.
Yeah, but what's the alternative? Subscription-based stuff or what?
Well, the alternative is going to be, I think, messaging systems things like...
Closed group?
No, there needs to be a... At the moment, we've got a standard. We've got a protocol called SMTP, or Simple Mail Transfer Protocol, and every mail server talks that language.
Mm-hmm.
What we need is something along the lines of a messaging system akin to that we have on Facebook, or we have on MySpace, or those types of social networking systems, but we need to have a common language where we can interface and we can talk to people on other networks as well.
Mm.
I think that'll happen.
All right. We'll see what happens, because something has to happen. Otherwise, we're going to explode.
Well, we are. The days of email and number are just going to get completely unusable. And this is the problem, as you say, at the moment, 95% of our traffic or whatever it is unsolicited and is not wanted.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our address. You can actually get through the spam filter these days with a bit of luck. It's been moved. A new highly whiz-bang thing is now in place. And yes. Send us an email. Test it out. There's a few people sent us in some emails already this evening, which is terrific. Michael, Jeff, and Simon down there, and John. Yes. Good evening to you all.
If you can't get through and you've got a problem, you can always ring us. Our feedback number is 1-300-664-882 or 90125362, off the top of my head. I think that's the one that international
Indeed.
People can use.
Now, you used to have a laptop.
Uh-huh.
You've had a.
I told you not to mention the war, but you just have.
A few frustrated phone calls. You should have rung the Tech Talk Radio feedback line, not me.
And said, Andrew, I should have just vented at the voicemail box for half an hour, shouldn't I?
What happened? You had a laptop which the power connector wasn't charging, and that was the beginning of the end. Is that how that sort of.
It is. I need you to tell me if I'm being a pedantic, grumpy consumer, or if I've got a valid point, or if I just need to bite the bullet and stop throwing good money after bad. The situation happened that I had an old laptop, and it's an Acer brand. It's an Acer TravelMate, so it's probably 8 to 10 years old. It was a great laptop. Bought it new back in the days when I was working about 3 jobs ago.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, and this is a common fault on laptops and such devices, is a concentric power connector on the back, and that's where you plug your power pack. That's what you use to charge the battery.
Mm-hmm.
this became a little bit wobbly.
Did it?
Like a loose tooth.
Yeah.
And eventually...
But it's easy to break those because all you need to do is swing your laptop around and it catches the corner of the bench or something like that, or the bookshelf and twang.
That's right. It's a very...
Easily done. Well, so you would think easy to repair.
It's a very common problem. Yeah. So I thought what I'll do is I'll take it to get repaired. It's going to cost me maybe $100, maybe $200 to get repaired. I'm prepared to wear that rather
than... For a 30-cent part and the rest labour. Yep.
Well, yeah. Look, if it has to be, it has to be. If it's a normal PC, I might have tried to tackle it myself. But for a laptop, I don't know how to pull the thing apart. I haven't got enough. So I thought I'll put it in to get repaired. The service company that I put it into, who I'm not going to name just yet because I might still be involved in some wrangling with them, they had a look at it and said, yeah, we'll charge you $200 and we'll fix it. And they rang me up and said, it's done, come and pick it up. So I drove over to Camberwell, picked it up, drove home, turned it on. Only half the keyboard worked when I got home.
Which half?
Every second or third key or something. And I thought, to start with, I thought it's one of those problems where you think, oh, I've got the numlock turned on.
Mm.
And maybe it's those keys that aren't working. But that wasn't the problem. There were keys that randomly weren't working.
And it worked beautifully last time.
Oh, it was fine. There's nothing wrong with the keyboard. So rang them up, said, look, there's a problem with the keyboard. I think what's happened is there's a very delicate, thin ribbon cable inside that connects the keyboard to the main board.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just not being plugged in properly when they put it back together.
Mm-hmm.
So, drove back over to Camberwell in the traffic, said, look, I'll wait here while you fix it. And they go, yeah, no worries. 15 minutes later, they come out of the workshop. Hi there, Dr. Ron.
Did they call you Dr. Ron?
No, I'm just
They wouldn't have done this if they'd known who you were.
They said, look, that keyboard that was only half working. I said, yells. I said, it's not working at all now. So, here's your laptop back. Sorry about that. The cable's broken.
Yeah. Who broke the cable?
Oh, I said, what you mean to tell me I've brought you a perfectly good working laptop except for the power connector, which you fixed, and now you're giving it back to me and the cable in the keyboard's broken. You're saying there's nothing you can do about it and here it is and good luck with your projects. And they said, yep.
Yes. Now, I wouldn't be paying anything for getting the power plug fixed because you still have a useless computer.
And by the way, the PS2 connector still works, said the salesman, so I can sell you a keyboard if you'd like me to.
I'll not give you one, but sell you one after they broke it.
Correct. And I said, well, that's not really good enough.
Certain telcos that have this attitude out there too.
Am I being pedantic or
absolutely not. If you take something in which is functional and it's not functional when it returns back from a service department call, well, yeah, you've got every right to go and rattle their cage, I would have thought.
Well, I was trying to put myself in their position thinking, well, if I'd fixed something and someone had inadvertently been damaged, I'd be trying to do everything I could to make the customer happy, to repair it, to replace it, to refund them.
And then to have the nerve to charge you for the repair on the previous job.
That's just it. So, yeah, not very impressed. So, at the moment, I've got an Acer laptop without a keyboard.
Fantastic. Mm. So, anyone out there getting your laptop fixed, beware. Just make sure that, all those little contracts that you sign on the back of those documents when you drop it in for being a service, the all care, no responsibility contract, just make sure that, everything's working except, and hopefully you'll come out unscathed at the other end. So.
That's the one. I mean, I know it's 10 years old. It's well and truly exceeded its life expectancy.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter whether it's 2 years old or 10 years
old. Well,
this is it. It works.
This is the contentious issue.
Yeah. All right, just briefly, because we're running over time, the mobile phone dilemma. Everyone sort of has it from time to time, as I alluded to in the opening of the show. I took a bit of my own advice, really, and I've broken away from contracts.
What have you done?
Which is very interesting. My contract for my phone was up, and as a result, I thought, right, now's the time to break away and do what I want to do. Now, we have a property which is out in the country, and let me tell you, the only potential service that could actually work out there would be Next G.
Right.
Haven't tested it yet, but nonetheless, that's the theory. It says it does on the maps, but what you see on the maps is everywhere you need it, apparently, but we won't go there tonight. But anyway, I chose to buy what technically I needed.
Okay.
Not get on a plan. I chose to buy it. Now, the reason I chose to buy this was because I could then swap and mix my carriers for the technology that I have. As the next phone company comes down the line and they may offer better service in my area, I'm not locked into a contract.
Right.
Having done all of this research, I've actually fathomed out one of the reasons or one of the things that Telstra does, which is quite interesting. If you go to a provider, most providers, now I can't say 100% that it's all providers because I didn't research it that thoroughly, but most providers cover the cost of a handset in your monthly payments on a cap. So if you're on a $29 or a $49 or a $69 cap or whatever it is that is part of the repayment option for your handset.
There might be $5 of that repayment goes towards the handset.
Too right.
So after 2 years, you've actually paid for the handset.
That's right.
Okay.
Telstra don't do that. Telstra actually add that to the cap, from what I can read, based on their website and speaking to the sales rep the other day when I was talking to him.
So oh, okay.
Well, this is good, because what this means is that you can get a telephone connected to the network and pay absolutely nothing for that. Like,
you can pay nothing for the connection.
Nothing for the connection.
So you're actually buying the phone outright up front?
Yes. And you could say, I'd like to have a SIM and I don't want to be on a plan. And they'll give you a SIM and they'll charge you the normal market rates for telephone calls, not unlike what you do on your home phone, except you pay line rental.
You see, you don't actually need to be on a plan because you're not making monthly repayments for a handset.
That's right.
Okay, gotcha.
That's right. So you can go and buy your handset or use a handset that you've already got. Choose one which works for you, because there's a lot of new technology coming out with GPS is now built into telephones and mapping stuff, as you saw today on this device that I've got.
Yeah.
Now, it may not be too important, but let me tell you, in 6 months' time, when everyone's got it, it'll be absolutely fantastic. There's some great facilities on this new device that I've got here, which actually lets you log into a certain area. And if your family's got one of these devices, you can all meet in the same spot electronically, and you can see through the mapping system where these particular family members are. Great for kids.
Yep.
Great if you've lost your phone. Where do I leave my phone? It's at the office. Oh, great.
Maybe if you're not actually using it for making calls, you're not going to get bills.
Hey, now you're exactly right.
Okay.
So if you want to have a SIM and just have it for receiving incoming calls, go and get one of these plans. Put it in a handset and say, I don't want to buy a plan. I just want the service. And there is no fee. It's a $0 service fee, and you only pay for the calls you make. So you're not on a plan. Not paying $29 or $15 or
$99. Now, this has been your experience with Telstra.
It has.
Well, this is very, very interesting, because they've obviously changed the way they're doing business. They're obviously caving to a bit of market pressure.
Maybe.
Because I was in this exact position a couple of years ago when I moved to my current provider from Telstra, and I said to them, all I want is a SIM card. I've got the device.
Mm-hmm.
I bought one of the new iMate PDAs.
Yeah, you're talking about Hutchison's. I think we should name here.
Well, that was the new mob I went to. Yep. But at the time, I was with Telstra.
And they still don't have a SIM-only plan, which is what I got really basically off Telstra.
Okay, so
where you provide your own hardware and bring it across.
Well, that's what I wanted to do at the time, and they said, no, you can't do it.
See, my dilemma now is that when I go and renew my Hutchison's or my 3 contract, I'm still going to pay $29 for whatever the cap is I'm on. I think I'm on a $69 cap.
Yeah.
But they're going to give me a handset that I don't want. You know what I mean?
That's right, yeah.
So the way that I've done it is actually more costly, because I'm not in a contract, but it means that I can use the technology when it becomes available, or pull a SIM out and swap and change and utilize the market for what it is.
You're paying a little bit of a premium for some flexibility.
Too right, too right. So, and I think we're all very much used to being in caps these days. You know, everyone thinks, oh, I've got to get on a cap. And it is good, because it does what it says. But at the end of the day, too, you're locked in with a company for that period of time, and you can't get a new handset unless you do. You go out and buy one, or you know, migrate your way through technology that way.
Yeah.
So it's well worth considering in this day and age. Now, I actually had an email here from a listener this morning from Simon. Why should customers be locked into... Hang on. I feel like the ABC here. The screen's just refreshed. Talk amongst yourselves while I scroll back up. Where did he go?
I've got it here. Why should customers be locked into lengthy contracts for 24 months or sometimes longer, considering how fast technology is moving in the mobile phone market? And what if the phone dies after the 12-month manufacturer warranty? Lengthy contracts, in my opinion, hold people to ransom rather than encourage customers to stay.
Hear, hear. Couldn't agree with you more.
24 months or longer. Can you imagine being in a phone plan?
Okay, now that's mobile. What about internet? You got to be kidding, haven't you?
Oh, well, this is the same thing, isn't it? Now we've got plans for...
Yeah, but you can actually pay an extra bit more, like $50 upfront fee, and you with some ISPs, and you're not in a contract. And that's a great way to go.
So if a different technology, say ADSL 2 Plus, or a different technology becomes available after 6 or 7 months, you're not having to pay an exit
that's
fee
right.
from the plan.
They're not going to, oh, look, you signed up for a 24-month contract, and that means
you owe us $700.
Yeah. Mm. And for the sake of paying $50 earlier on in the piece and becoming autonomous, I think that's good. And everybody, technologically-wise, I think should look at those sort of things down the track, which would be absolutely fantastic. So don't think about caps and plans for caps and plans' sake. Look at it for your best.
Very good.
Intentions all down the line. All right.
Simon, thanks for the feedback. Can I ask you a quick personal question? You've signed up to Telstra again.
I haven't.
No.
I haven't signed up to anybody.
Oh, you have. Okay. Okay.
I have a SIM.
But you've bought a SIM card from them.
I haven't signed up to them. That's the thing. It's not a contract.
Yeah, all right. Were you an existing Telstra customer already?
For a business line, yes. Don't go there.
This is something that's a real bugbear. I might have a rant about this on my blog, I think.
Yes, I did have to give them a DNA swab, a blood test,
paternity tests,
all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I'm already an existing account holder.
The mind boggles, that's all I can say. You're an existing account holder and they want 100 points of ID to open another account.
If you go and buy a piece of hardware, you just give me a credit card and they go, thanks all the same. You know, jing jing and you walk out the door. But you're an existing account holder. You've already been through the... You know, you need 100 points in this country to open a bank account. Well, you need 10,000 points to open a Telstra account.
When you're a customer already, you just want to add a service or add something to an existing account.
Let's not rant. Let's come back. Adam's good at doing that. He's got a view from the couch.
Oh, just good.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
Wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, goes blah, 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 and you get a whole service. Just on. How does it go? It goes... Blah, blah, blah.
Insightful, entertaining and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Just listening to the promo there, we had Howard Langmedian a couple of years back talking about technology and religion, which is quite an interesting thing. I wonder if his ePray has been working overtime during this current Easter break. Would have been good, wouldn't it?
It would. He's a crazy, crazy man. We'll have to get him back on the show.
Yeah. He's a stand-up comedian who wears a collar. It's pretty amazing sort of stuff.
Yes.
Now, Dr. Ron, talk to me about high definition. You have a high definition set. You happy with it? Does it work?
Yeah, I am happy with it.
Yeah. And what about the content that's on television? Are you happy with that?
No, I'm not happy with the content on television. I use it a lot for movies, a lot for watching DVDs, watching stuff off my media centre. Occasionally we put the news on at 6 o'clock in the evening and, yeah, look, so content on TV at the moment... There's nothing there that really grabs me.
Doesn't quite cut it for you, huh?
Doesn't, no. You've got a long way to go.
Yeah, well, Adam's are pretty much of the same opinion, except with a different slant on things. So let's have a listen to this week's View from the Couch, all about the wonders of high-definition and free-to-air television.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Unlike 7 and 10, the Nine Network amazingly hasn't betrayed Australian HD TV owners with the launch of its new Nine HD high-definition channel. Now, I'm not a fan of the packer-based Nine Network and its practices, but you have to give credit where credit is due. I criticised 7 for treating viewers like idiots when it launched its HD channel, but used it as a second SD channel. As such, I need to praise 9 for surprisingly having enough sense not to do the same. Nine is the last of the big three commercial networks to relaunch its high-def channel since the regulations changed to allow networks to screen different shows on their high-def and standard-def channels. Nine might be last, but at least they seem to be doing it right. Seven's HD channel launch was a rush job and a disaster, designed to beat the other networks to the punch rather than to meet the needs of viewers. Seven took the ludicrous approach of just treating its HD channel as a second SD channel, screening SD comedy reruns on the HD channel when the program on the SD channel was actually available in high definition. There's no faster way to annoy viewers who've spent a lot of money on high def gear than to pull high def content off the air. The fact 7 didn't even have the decency to warn viewers first was the icing on the arrogance cake. Meanwhile, the director for strategy at Nine's owner PBL Media, David Coleman, told The Age last week that 9HD programming couldn't differ substantially from what's on the SD channel because an increasing amount of the programs are actually filmed in high definition. Hallelujah! A commercial network that finally seems to grasp the fact that people want to watch high-def shows like CSI in full high-def glory. Maybe someone could explain this to the fools at 10 so I can watch Letterman in high-def again. Even Talking Heads look better in HD once you've got a big television. 9HD will predominantly show what's on the network's main SD channel, as well as about 12 hours a week of unique content between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. This is compared to more than 30 hours of unique content each from 7 and 10's HD channels. Unlike 7 with Boston Legal, 9 has less of a tendency to screen high quality programs after 10:30 p.m, so viewers aren't likely to care that late night viewing isn't simulcast. Third rate late night quiz shows like The Mint certainly don't need to be seen in high definition. Actually, they're so bad it's axed because no one even wants to watch it in standard definition. Now, 9's Coleman said that the network was much more excited about the additional SD channel the free-to-air stations will have permission to broadcast from January 1 next year. This will be similar to what the ABC has with ABC 2, so it'll be more than one standard definition, each showing different programs. Now, 7 and 10 betrayed HD TV owners by using their HD channels as de facto second SD channels. So perhaps when SD multi-channeling is introduced, they'll turn their HD channels back into actual HD channels. Meanwhile, 9 appears to have the moral high ground. It's an Easter miracle.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, The Mint.
People
Dr. Ron, have you ever seen The Mint?
I flicked over it. It's, pretty mind-numbing, I've got to say.
Some woman sitting there sort of like 2 inches from the camera lens saying, no, you're wrong.
That's right. Hundreds of thousands of people on hold on their telephone lines and they just filter through one call every 5 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think Adam's got some good points there. The government's done the right thing. They've made legislative changes so that the networks can start to multi-channel different content.
Yeah.
7 and 10 need to lift now, don't they?
Yeah, but turn it the other way. Think what you were doing if you were a television station executive. Here are three new streams of income for advertising. They can be either anything or whatever you want to do. So not only in that one, say, in an hour of television, instead of running, four ads, say five ads, I can't remember what the regulation is, I'm out of the broadcasting side stuff for so long, but say it was five ads in four slots. There's 20 commercials. Multiply that across four, there's 100 commercials.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit more revenue up your stream, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And then if you think about what HD is, HD is just another form of television. And because people, unlike us, unlike Adam,
but it looks nicer, better resolution, and it's nicer to watch.
Yeah, but
picture.
Can you tell the difference? Let me tell you, because I'm in the TV industry, I can show you a high-definition picture that'll make your high-definition picture just go, oh, I'm missing out here,
aren't
I? That
looks a bit flat. Yes.
And my point is, not to be arrogant, but my point is to say that you don't know what you've got until you've got it. It's like having the microwave at home.
Mm.
Everyone goes, oh, yeah, I can live without a microwave. Yeah, I just cook my food and warm it up in the pot. Then you get a microwave and you go, wow, this is great. Can't go back now. Same with HD. Mm. When you see true high definition, 1080i, not this 720p stuff, not what you
this
say.
This Australian television stuff.
Yeah. Mm. When you see 1080i, it sparkles. And when it's shot and captured properly, it's even better. Now, from a production point of view, the production costs traditionally are fairly steep when it comes to high definition. One of the biggest costs is in the lenses on the cameras that the guys have to use, not your average. I'm not talking about your handycam type sort of things. I'm talking about professional lenses which you shoot television with.
Right.
They're normally about four times the price of the camera itself because you buy your lenses.
Yikes.
Now, that is reflected in production because networks have to buy them. Also, if you're making television commercials for the private sector, they have to pay for that because your production costs go up because the gear's worth more money.
Yep.
So high definition as a production tool is fairly expensive. So everyone cuts costs. Would it surprise you to know that some programs on television right now, which are promoted as high definition, are shot in high definition, down-converted to standard definition, and then reconverted back up to high definition?
Why do they do that?
For cost-saving things, because editing facilities traditionally are expensive.
Ah, okay, so you've got equipment in the middle there where you have editing being done, and people are just using the cheapest equipment they can.
It is lowest common denominator stuff here. You get stuck behind the VW on the single, the old Beetle on the single lane highway,
and your Ferrari's only going to go 80 kilometres an hour.
That's right, unless you've got wings.
Mm.
Anyway, so yeah, high definition. Watch this space. Oh, well,
I just go to the movies these days.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Find something half decent to watch on television. I know, I make the stuff and I wouldn't watch it.
That's it.
Oh, don't let that get out. No. All right, let's get back to the rundown. Phone manufacturers' features are a turn-off. Oh, well, here you go. Surprise, surprise. Mobile phones keep adding whiz-bang features, but research released this week suggests fewer people than makers would like to are bothering to use them. Now, let me tell you, the gadgets that you get on your phone, have you actually used all of them? I'm still discovering one on this new handset I've got here. But there's things on there I'm going, what on earth would I want to use that for?
Yeah, I discover things on my phone occasionally. You skip through advanced menus and you think, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know my phone could do that.
No, no. Well, I didn't. Whoops, the handset that I've bought here at the moment has got some really nice features in it. It's shock resistant.
Is it like that one that just fell on the floor there?
But it's actually got built-in GPS technology in it. Now, your average person's going to go, I don't need GPS technology. It's like the microwave oven scenario.
Yeah, yep.
Until you find the cause that you actually say, well, I want to go from A to B and I don't have a nav man, I'll use my phone.
Or until you find an application that actually uses GPS as part of it, as a fundamental component of the application, you think, wow, that's a good idea.
But this device replaces your nav man in your car or your TomTom.
Yeah, yep.
You know, terrific sort of stuff. Now, all this technology is coming, and that's why I'm saying don't get in plans before, but we're not going to go over that again. But, yeah, the gadgets that these mobile phone people put into these phones these days, you know, people go, well, what am I ever going to use that for? One thing which I did find, another useful feature in this, which I didn't buy it for, was the fact that there's actually a radio in there. Now, that's not new to a lot of people, but the ability to mow the lawns and whack your earpiece in while you're mowing the lawns or doing whatever it is that you're doing.
That's the one.
And take a call at the same time is terrific.
I use the FM radio in mine when I'm transiting, when I'm on public transport.
Oh, yeah. That's been good. That's the only downside is they don't have AM. Because who
wants to listen? Downside, yeah. I like listening
just
to some
because
of the
AM's
talk programs.
Yeah, AM's traditionally talk. Mm. Well, it is in this town anyway, and FM is sort of, yeah, that's good. Anyway. All right, so there you go. A bit of phone gadget things. People aren't taking too much to those these days. Infected Australian computers fetch top dollar. Now, Dr. Ron, you mentioned this in the news.
This was in the news.
Hackers are paying top dollar on international black market for computers from Australia.
They are.
As opposed to the rest of the world, a Russian malware distribution site offering US $100 for a haul of 1,000 spyware-infected Australian machines doubles the price offer of the US machines and 30 times more of those from Asia.
That's it.
Is Australia just thick?
I think so. I think it's because...
Why are we so wanted on the black market?
I think we're just...
Click first and ask questions later?
We're just a bit laid back here.
My wife's like that.
What?
Click first. Why isn't it working? Click.
That's it. Yeah,
there's one of those in every office too, let me tell you.
You're getting a warning here. I'll just close the warning. It's right. It's what Adam Turner calls warning fatigue.
Yes.
Get all these messages popping up saying, are you sure? This is trying to access the internet. Do you want to block this?
Yeah, Kaspersky did
the
other day.
Whatever. Click. Yeah, just do it. I just want to get to my website. Yeah. Install what? Yeah, just install whatever you like. I just need to get to my shopping website. And what they're finding is that the Australian machines, comparatively with machines in other countries, are very easy to infect and very valuable when it
comes to Australia, lift.
Very valuable when it comes to actually assembling botnets and networks, zombie networks.
Oh, where they're big. Okay. Well, that's good. Zombie networks are what people do. They install little bits on your computer and when you leave your machine on late at night, they activate them and they send spam or denial of service attacks.
Unbeknownst to you, your machine could be hammering a website somewhere on the other side of the globe and you don't even know about it.
Mm.
But your machine's one of 500,000 that are doing this.
Well, there's one we're going to talk about later if we get to it. There was a cyber attack from 10,000 web pages recently. 10,000.
10,000. Mm. 10,000 zombies attacking a website.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, anyway. So, Australia, just don't click everything that pops up on your website window, especially the spams. Don't ever click those things. I know they might be tempting, but there's a reason why they're tempting, because when you go there, you'll probably find it's not what you're expecting, and too late, if you haven't got your defences up, there's a little bit of software that we just spoke about that's nestled deeply in your system.
That's right. Everyone's always been conscious of antivirus software. Make sure you've got some good functioning anti-spyware software as well, something like Microsoft's Defender or Webroot Spy Sweeper, one of those sorts of products.
Graham will be driving back from the bush and he'll be going, but...
No, Graham would endorse me saying that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, he would, but he'll have his own 2 cents to put in. So, anyway.
He's a big Defender fan.
Is he?
Mm.
Google will shortly launch a search engine-driven service in Perth that helps people better plan their journey using the public transport system. Don't ever try and do this in our town. Google Call Google Transit. The service feeds off timetable information from the Western Australian State Transport Authority, and it's the first of its kind in the Southern Hemisphere. The online service works with the Australian-developed Google Maps product and throws up a route map for the desired journey, which is entered through a search box.
Huh.
The application can plan trips weeks in advance. Don't try that here. And can also show points of interest and shopping, eating and entertainment venues along the way. Once again, this is going back to our mobile phone devices. Don't get in a contract, for goodness sake. You won't be able to start playing with these sort of gadgets.
If they bring this sort of thing out next month, might be until 2010 before you can take advantage of it.
So good on you, Perth. We go out there on one of the radio stations in Perth.
We do.
So well done, Perth. Let us know. Someone listening over there.
We've got a large bus network and a large metropolitan train network in Perth.
Hmm. I wonder if it can do real-time things. Because we have trams here in Melbourne, and there's Tram Tracker, which I don't know much about. I've seen it on the billboards around the place. But I think that's an SMS service where you can send a text to a computer somewhere, and it says, yes, run. You're running late. You've got 5 minutes
or
to get there.
Your tram's running 7 minutes late, and it'll be at your tram stop soon.
Yes. Mm. But I think that's where technology's going to take us. We're going to have all these new value-added services that are going to pop up, and who knows? You could almost probably get an SMS. You know, your train leaves in 5 minutes' time. Run.
Shut down the computer now. Pack up and leave.
I wonder how viable that would be in other areas. Probably, I'd say, very viable in small rural communities and things like that. Where there's, you know, simplified services compared to maybe some of the city centres where you've got all the adjoining sort of, you know, you have to catch this bus to this point, you jump off that bus, get on that tram or get on that train or get on that ferry and then catch a plane. Or I don't know. Be interesting to see how it goes. And I think the airlines would probably be able to do something really good in that sort of technology too. But, you know, watch this space. Don't get on a plane. Just be free. Be free out there in
be free.
Mobile phone land.
Yes.
Does it come as any surprise that Australians prefer the internet to TV?
No, whatsoever.
I must admit, I'm a convert here. I would spend 90% of my free and available time.
The TV that we watch is on the internet or it's downloaded from the internet. It's not free-to-air TV.
Too right. The good news is that many of us are watching less television, and the bad news is we're still addicted to the screen. Well, yeah, as you said, Dr. Ron.
Yeah.
Research released last week by Nelson Online shows an exodus last year of Australians from the TV to the PC. On average, internet users spent 13.7 hours a week online, and TV viewers spent 13.3 hours in front of the box. This compares with 12.5 hours a week online and 13.8 hours watching TV in 2006.
I reckon that's a lot. I would see 13 hours to me, that'd be like 2 hours a night on weeknights and, 3 hours on the weekend. I reckon that's a lot of TV viewing. I wouldn't do that.
No, but I also suspect that they're not taking into consideration home theatre users, because nowadays we all have our 5.1 thing in the thing, 7.1 coming soon, or if they haven't got it already, the Blu-ray, the big plasma.
So when they're talking about watching television, they're talking about watching free-to-air programming, not talking about sitting in front of a TV.
I'm reading between the lines here, because Nelson do the TV ratings, and if they know when the box is on and what you're watching type sort of thing, so that's probably where they're drawing their data from. But yes, there's so much more fun things to do online, and there's so many more interesting things. You can listen to radio stations on the other side of the world. I've done that on the odd occasion too, thanks to the technology of streaming and all those sort of things. So,
would you sit down with your family in front of the TV and look at the internet? There's a lot of people do that these days. They say, well, there's nothing on the box. It's all just garbage programming. Let's just put the computer on, which they put up on the big screen in the lounge room, and we'll have a surf around YouTube for an hour.
Mm.
Or we'll look at people's Facebooks for an hour.
You're gutsy with young kids, but yeah. It's all right if you're grown adults, but yes.
Yeah.
You never know what that mouse button might bring you up to inadvertently.
But I think that sort of thing's happening more and more now. Certainly a lot more so than it was 5 years ago. So.
Yeah, too right. All right, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. If you want to participate, we'd love to hear from you on this long weekend that we're having. Maybe not quite so long, depending upon where you're listening to us down the end of the week. But welcome aboard to all of you. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron and Andrew McComb at the panel this evening, because everybody else is on holidays.
How many times have you bookmarked a site or put it into your favourites folder at work, only to get home and think, oh no, I really need that URL? And this is where social bookmarking comes in really handy. The coolest thing about social bookmarking is that you can access your bookmarks, Firefox people, or your favourites, i.e. people, from anywhere, home, work, or a friend's computer. It's pretty much an online home for your favourites folder. The other nice thing about social bookmarking sites is that they allow you to share your favourite sites and your favourite pages with friends, family, and colleagues, if you want to. or you can mark your bookmarks as private. Delicious is considered the original social bookmarking site, and this is the one I want to focus on today. It was created in 2003 by Joshua Schachter as an informal way to share web pages between his friends. From there, it pretty much took off, and in December 2005, Yahoo acquired Delicious for some huge amount of money that's never been disclosed. Now, it has more than 3 million users and 100 million bookmarked URLs. But why should you use it? Let's say you're a web developer who uses the web to find specifications or converters or sites that offer snippets of code. There are so many out there, it gets tricky keeping up. If you bookmark or favorite it in your browser, you usually file it under one category. For instance, let's say you find a great color palette site. On your computer, it goes under Tools. On Delicious, you can tag it Tools, CSS, Colors, Palettes. Whatever keywords or tags will help you find it later on. Delicious makes finding your saved stuff a whole lot easier. To sign up, first go to delicious.com and sign up for a free account. Don't worry about the strange spelling of it you've seen. Originally, the URL was del.icio.us. Nowadays, you can just type in delicious.com and you'll be redirected. While you're signing up, you'll see a couple of toolbar buttons to add to your browser. Grab them, they're really useful. The nice thing about Delicious is that it doesn't put yet another toolbar in your browser, just the two buttons. The first one, My Delicious, will take you once you've signed up to your page on Delicious so you can get your bookmarks with one click from your browser. The second button, Tag This, is how you add new bookmarks to your Delicious page. Whenever you come across a web page that you want to save, hit the Tag button. It opens up a new window that automatically shows the URL of the page you're on and the page title. You can add a description if you like, but the most important thing is to add the tags. These tags will help you find your bookmarks later. On Delicious, tags are separated by a space, not a comma, in the tag section. Type in as many tags as you need, and it'll be saved to your Delicious page. One word on tags, though, they need to be single words. That is, they can't contain spaces. The beauty of this type of system, especially for those of us who are useless at filing, is that it makes filing really, really easy. Imagine hunting for a site you came across 6 months ago if you keep it in your bookmarks in your browser. You know that it was about colours, but you can't remember whether you filed it under CSS, palettes, colour, or the one you've forgotten, tools. If you're anything like me, you can end up spending 10 minutes wading through the chaos that you call your bookmarks and possibly not find it anyway. This doesn't happen with Delicious. Go to CSS or go to colour, even tools, and voila, there it is under each tag. This is why tags are so important. The social aspect of social bookmarking allows you to share your bookmarks and to view the pages that have been bookmarked by others under specific tags. So let's go back to the web developer example. You can search tags for CSS and see what others are saying about it. It will show you the pages that have been most recently tagged, and you can sort the information by popularity, meaning the number of people who've been bookmarking that page. While social sites such as Dig, StumbleUpon and Mix allow for dialogue among members, Delicious doesn't. Nor do you vote, review or comment on other people's submissions. All you are doing is saving a site as a favourite. However, Delicious does have a hot list. The hot list can be found on the homepage of Delicious, and it consists of the most recently bookmarked pages on the web, pages that have been bookmarked by many individuals at that current point in time. If you have a website or a blog, it might be interesting to go and search for your keywords. For instance, Tech Talk Radio, no spaces, remember, and see if it's been bookmarked and by how many. So today's lesson is tying your bookmarks to only one computer is no longer the most efficient way to work. Neither is hoarding them for yourself. Put your favourites on the web, share them with friends, and have access to your favourite pages anytime and anywhere. And don't forget to go and check whether you've been deliciced. If you've got any questions, send me an email, lid@techtalkradio.com.au, or just chat to me on Twitter. My username is MadLid. This is Lydia Davis, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, it's a panel of two this evening. Dr. Ron and Andrew McComb here. Thank you for joining us wherever you might be listening to us, around Australia, on the stream, on the pod. If you're sitting there listening to us on public transport.
You never know. And thanks very much, Lead, for that fantastic
Yeah, did you learn something?
I did.
I'm going to put my vote in for Twitter next week. Learning about Twitter.
She's a good girl. Well, she's doing very well. I've been using Delicious for a long time. I use it as a homepage.
Do you?
So when I set up a computer and I set up the browser, I always make sure the homepage goes to my Delicious account.
Yeah.
And the address, not sure if Lyd mentioned or not, the address is del.icio.us.
Yeah, but the other one works too.
What's the other one?
Delicious.com.
Spelled as in the normal English way. I always put del.ico.us as the main name.
Stick with us, you learn things. I'm learning things all the time here. It's fantastic.
It's a good way to do it, having collaborative bookmarking and setting it up with tags.
We got into trouble with her husband the other day. Hi, Martin, if you're listening there in Palo Alto.
You got a rude email.
I did. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yes, that's why there was no introduction this week.
I think you called her the girl on
the...
Oh, no, I'm not allowed to say that anymore. To go back and listen to last week.
Exactly.
It was very funny.
She is not. Thank you. She's said Martin, so there you go. That was very funny.
It was meant in an affectionate way.
It was. Yeah, it was. It just didn't come out quite the way it was intended. Ah, dear. All right. Back to Tech Talk Radio. Mobile phone revenue continues to grow. This is no surprise either. Revenue growth in Australia's mobile phone sector has continued its strong upward trend, gaining 9.9% in 2007. I thought we were a saturated market already when it came to mobile phones, but obviously not. Because they just continue to go and grow. But how many phones do you have these days? Like, I gave my kids today two mobile phones from my, you know, plans that had expired that were sitting on the bench there. My little...
Just to muck around with?
Yeah, yeah. My eldest wanted she wants a digital camera. And I thought, oh, God, here we go, another $100. And then I've gone, ding, there's a digital camera in that mobile phone that I don't use anymore.
That old one in the junk box.
There. Yeah, so I ratted around and I found an old SIM card and I just stuck it in there and it says SIM inactive. I said, beauty, there you go, go for your life. So she's been snapping photos with this camera. And she reckons it's Christmas. Well, Easter, should I say.
It is Easter. Oh, good on her. So she's taking photos.
Yeah. So there you go, right, parents out there. Just think a bit outside the square, and when your kid comes up to you and says, can I have a digital camera for my birthday or something like that, just think of one of those old mobile phones that's lying around there on the desk. Have you got a collection of those? I saw your hard drives in the hallway the other night, the ones from your collection last year.
You almost can't walk in the front door at
my house. I've got another 40 gig one there for you as well.
Oh, terrific.
For our listeners who have just joined us, we did this thing the other day and we got people to send in old dead hard drive. Well, under 40 gig hard drives or whatever it was.
Old ones, junk box hard disks.
It was very funny because you got hundreds of things. Well, there must be about 50 or 60 sitting in the corner there in that big box. And Australia Post people coming to the door saying, delivery for Dr. Ron. Oh, not another one.
Another one. Yes.
So, back to mobile phones. Yes, that's probably a good option for them, recycle them with the kids. They have a lot of fun out of them too.
So where's the mobile phone revenue growing? In what area?
Oh, sorry, we were talking about that, weren't we?
Yeah, that's right. We'll get there eventually. Is it? It'll be value-added services, I'm guessing.
Potentially. A steady increase in mobile revenue, which comes alongside continuing broadband penetration. So I suspect there's a lot of broadband behind getting these people on mobile networks these days. Was driven by the addition of 1.4 million mobile subscribers last year, 38% increase on 2006. And that's according to JP Morgan analysts. Australia's mobile market, which is rapidly approaching full penetration, which I can see everyone's got one now, surely, generated $11.25 billion in revenue in 2007 for the big four players, Telstra, Optus, Vodafone and Hutchison. Revenue for sales of mobile equipment also grew 19.1% to $1.27 billion, helped by me buying a phone uncapped, but I guess that doesn't care in their stats or anything like that, so... Everything's on the grow. Wireless broadband grew by 9.3% and the market's worth $9.98 billion. Yes, well, Telstra's getting a lot of that. Best network, though.
You reckon?
Without a shadow of a doubt. Despite all the fun and games and everyone has a go at, they have the best coverage. So, yes.
You just need the right tool for the job, don't you?
That's right. But if you think about the revenue growth in Australia and compare that to the revenue growth overseas, we're nothing.
No, we're
nothing
at all.
Only a population of 20 mil here
in
Australia.
We're a little backwater, not like the 1.1 billion in China.
Well, that's right. The mobile phone market in India is racing towards 300 million and doing so at a rate of 8.77 million new subscribers per month. That's half the population of this country getting a new mobile phone each month.
Every month.
So, according to the latest government figures. So there you go. So Telstra, Sol, move over to India. You've got a great revenue base over there. You can capture over there. I got an SMS from Sol last year. I don't know. We talked about that
last
year.
Yeah, that's right.
Very
we did
funny,
too.
Actually.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, there you go. So looking at the statistics, 3 months from now, India will have more new mobile subscribers than we have people in Australia. Thailand's mobile market is growing at 20% annually. And its broadband demand at 100%. China Mobile added 53.2 million customers in 2006 and has now passed 300 million mark for their country. An average of 4.43 million new customers monthly. Gee, there's a customer base for you.
It's good, isn't it? It's so amazing.
that was courtesy of ZDNet, I believe. One of their systems, I came across that during the week. I thought, wow, look at that. So our little market over here, it's a drop in the ocean.
But it is only a little market and it is only a drop in the ocean, but everybody internationally is watching what's being done here, especially with the HSDPA networks, the new generation of the 3G data networks, like Telstra's NextG. We are at the cutting edge of that sort of technology.
Well, we're fast and we're coverage in a lot of places, but there's still a few issues around the place. We've got in fact, coming up this month, CDMA gets turned off for a second time.
Yes, that's right.
So watch out for the fracas there that'll probably no doubt hit the airwaves. And I hope you've all bought your blue tick mobiles because you'll need them if you're in the country. There's a few good ones on the market.
Explain on what does the blue tick mean on a handset?
The blue tick is the Telstra way of saying this is good for rural users. So if you're living out the back of Cairns or if you're living out the back of anywhere in Australia and you want at least half a chance of getting a mobile phone call through, make sure you buy one if you're connecting to NextG with the blue tick. Very handy. You can get yourself one with a GPS too.
Maximizes.
If you can't get the phone network, at least you'll know where you are.
Well,
could come in handy.
Yes, exactly. That maximizes your chances of pulling in that last little bit of signal.
Exactly right. All right. In other interesting news too, carbon and copper, copper in particular, has been a great conductor of electricity. And most of the semiconductors that we have are based on copper.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well, they can't. Yeah, Moore's Law is rapidly being disproved. Moore being the founder of the Intel Corporation, who says things will go for each year, we'll do it twice as fast type sort
That's
of scenario
right.
in
yep.
a nutshell.
Yep.
Copper's becoming a bit of a problem. So the guys have discovered that carbon is better.
Why is copper becoming a problem? Well, is it because as we get smaller and smaller with
yeah,
things?
Yeah, just obviously it's, I'm no physicist here, but I'm sure it's something to do with the molecular structure of copper and potentially carbon, which to me doesn't sound right. I didn't think carbon was a conductor.
I thought it was used as an insulator.
But apparently not. Research at Reslanar Polytechnics, I think it is, Institute have conducted research including concluding and indicating that carbon nanotube, which is the really small little things, interconnectors can outperform copper nanowires in next generation semiconductors. To compare copper nanowires to the carbon nanotube bundles, the researchers has used advanced quantum mechanical computer modeling to run a vast simulations on high-powered semi-computers, or supercomputers. So they're obviously, building these new little, I guess, when you think about what a semiconductor is, it's just a whole heap of switches.
Yeah.
Ons and offs. So it's really getting it down smaller and smaller and smaller. And if they're talking about nanos, nano being a very, very small unit of measurement. What is it? Pico? Micro? Nano?
Is it a thousand millionth? Is it a nano? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, there'll be someone out there who can correct us and all that sort of stuff. But there you go. I just thought that was interesting that copper's just not quite cutting the mustard at that sort of large-scale integration devices, and we're now heading down the carbon factor. So, it was an interesting little sojourn. Google to power Optus's web search.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the zoo.
The
Optus Zoo. Yeah, Google has announced an agreement with Optus to power the telco's web search on its consumer portal, My Zoo. And boy, am I over the zoo analogies with Optus. How long have they been with us now? 10+ years and we're still playing with animals?
Every time you see a TV commercial, there's zebras and gorillas, monkeys, pelicans, polar bears, all singing and dancing on the top of buildings.
Let's do a straw poll of two people here in the studio because that's what we can do. You wouldn't buy... I refuse to buy an Optus product now because of their marketing. I really do. I'm not supporting another tiger ad on the television, which sings to me about... I just want it ludicrous, but anyway.
It's the singing hyenas that do it for me, that wear the hats and the dark glasses and
is that what it
play
is?
In the band and
you're the
play on their saxophone. I have used Optus products in the past, based purely on pricing, when I've been looking at stuff from a price competitive point of view.
I don't know many people on Optus. I really don't.
I don't use Optus at the moment for anything.
No? Okay.
No. They're starting to hammer the airwaves with their 3G offerings.
Better late, they cried.
Well, that's exactly right. On television and also on radio, started to see and hear some 3G network type advertisements by Optus.
Finally rolled out their network, have they?
Yeah. Good. Let us know if you're a user of such things. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
Mac, Justin's not here to defend himself. He's having an Easter break. We're going to talk about that just after this.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron at the panel this evening, a very intimate panel of two, and boy, are we enjoying it this evening. Ooh. The lights are down low, the Easter eggs are out.
It's nice and romantic. We're just looking at the Bureau of Met website. We're in for a bit of a downpour,
are
we?
It's time to run quickly. Did you bring your umbrella? Unusual things happening here. We don't normally get rain in this part of the world, but we are very shortly. But that's not what Tech Talk Radio is all about. But it is a good website, though, nonetheless. Let's talk about Macintosh OS X. Australia's latest security update. Apple's latest security update delivers a slew of patches for Mac OS X, including open source components. The 2008 002 update brings the versions of Apache included with the regular server versions of operating systems up to date. So,
Apache is the web server.
Yeah.
Is that what they're talking about?
Yeah, well, I guess so. And similarly, the Clam AV antivirus software that's part of the Mac OS X server is brought up to version 0.92.1, the latest stable release, which debuted in 2007. Apple has been criticized in the past for failing to provide its customers with up-to-date versions of open-source projects that are packed into the operating system.
Well, they are both open-source. I use both Apache and I also use Clam AV on my Linux server at home. And they're open-source projects, and I would imagine they'd be distributed by Apple as well.
Yeah, well, you can download your updates and you'll get all these new things.
Very good.
CUPS, have you heard of CUPS?
C-U-P-S? Yes, I have. And you're going to ask me what it stands for?
All right. I'll give you a prize if you can remember. But
CUPS. We're talking about the printing service, common Unix printing
service.
Oh,
well done that, man.
Is that right?
Grab yourself an Easter egg.
Oh,
yeah,
thank you.
Right.
Don't mind if I do.
The common Unix printing service, now owned and maintained by Apple, is updated to version 1.3.6, released in February, addressing vulnerabilities which could be used for denial of service attacks.
Right.
Good. Denial of service attacks, for those of you who aren't sure, is when an unscrupulous person wants to pick on a website. Call it Telstra, for no reason whatsoever. Could be the ABC, could be anything. And then they, with their little zombie machines that they install, when you go to those spam links, they all start doing requests to the said website, and as a result, no one else can get through to it or slows it right down. So they did that to Microsoft a couple of years back and took them off air for a while.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, Microsoft was down for quite a little while.
But anyway, so there you go. There's a bit of... Oh, also, the version of PHP, which is the also web-based scripting language.
That's
for,
right.
Which is supported on Server 2008 at Microsoft as well as in the Mac system, is updated to 4.4.8, which was released in early January. Now I'm not too familiar with where we're at with when it comes to all those sort of...
I've got PHP running on my Apache server as well. Yep. You've got PHP running on your web servers too, I think.
And it's now native in Server 2008, which means things are going to fly.
That's good.
The one thing I have noticed is doing a lot of web stuff as I do of recent times, the level of coding, you have to write a lot more for PHP than you do with ASP. And .NET?
You do. Yes, you do.
It's about 5-to-1 line ratio, I reckon. What you can do in ASP or something like that in about 20 lines, it takes you about 100 to do it in PHP. But
yes.
Maybe I'll stand corrected. Someone will send an email.
The PHP's generic, Andrew. You can use it, run it anywhere.
Well, that's the thing. It's like HTML. You can use HTML on any web server you like around the place too.
Exactly. So if you've written PHP code, I can take it from your Microsoft internet server and I can put it on my open source Linux Apache server and it will work.
I wish it was that simple.
It is.
No,
isn't that simple?
No, it's not quite. Because when you start doing those sort of things, you tend to pull in third-party apps and load up things. But that's for another show.
All right. That's getting pretty technical, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. Not what we're here for today. But also, while we're talking about Apple, they updated their Safari browser. Maybe it'll work on my PC now. Version 3.1 of the browser includes support for video and audio tags in HTML5 and supports the use of cascading style sheet animations and web fonts.
And also text in drop-down menus for you.
Yeah, good.
Is that the...
Does it?
Was that the problem you had with Safari? You could click on the menus and there was no text in any of them.
That's right.
Something very odd.
Now, just to take a step back, let's talk about browsers and once again web development. We've got three new releases from the top three browser offerings within the space of the next 6 months.
We've got the new version of Internet Explorer, which is the Microsoft...
IE8. coming out very shortly. Beta's out now, I think.
Yes.
We've got Firefox version 3, which is going to hit the streets any
day
now.
The Mozilla project, people.
G'day, Lid. And then we've also got Apple having a go too with Safari. So for all us web developers, watch out. Well, another set of cascading style sheets and more things to do there. But anyway.
Surely you just write a web page and it looks the same on every web browser the world
over.
No.
No?
Why not?
Absolutely not.
It should.
It should, but it doesn't.
It doesn't.
And then you've got...
Why is this? Is because web browsers interpret web code or web page code differently.
Oh, look. And there's bugs in them. You know, there's one of the things, like, if you go and have a look at some websites, I know IE loves putting an extra line of nothingness underneath some graphic files for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very handy when you're trying to join images together to make it look seamless, and IE's going, oh, great. So you have to get the IE's. But anyway, that's not too techie for where we're at today. So. But no, not all web browsers are the same. I wish they were, because then I'd have a really cruisy job.
Now, there was a website, which I can't just remember off the top of my head, you might remember it, where you could go and you could point it to a site that you developed and you could say, show me what this looks like if I'm running this version of Safari. And it will draw an image on the screen. Or show me what this website looks like if I'm running version 5 of Internet Explorer. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
No.
But there are ones up on the forum.
Yeah. I don't know the site, but I know there are a few emulating sites.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's an emulation site which shows you what sites look like in different versions of different browsers. It's very useful if you're doing web development.
There's something else I read today too, and I can't find the documentation on it, but I'm sure it'll pop up here in a sec. You know how when you load up iTunes and it takes over your machine and it puts on all these sort of programs?
More iTunes ranting. Okay.
Yes. There's a program which it installs which does the lookup and checks that you've got the current version of all the Apple products in your machine.
Oh, yes. We're painfully aware of that.
Okay. We'll be painfully aware that in the new version of iTunes, it will have the checkbox for the Internet the Apple Safari for XP, and it'll be checked for you. So for those people who go click, 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 you'll have your own version of Apple's.
No. And it will probably set itself as the default browser.
Oh, bound to, you know. Watch out.
So the next time you click on a web link in an email, suddenly Safari will open and you think, well, I never installed this. Where does this come from?
Exactly.
And it's because you're an iTunes user and you've got warning fatigue.
Yeah, and there'll be Mac people out there going, well, it's just, you know, karma, really, isn't it?
So I'll be going, hooray.
All right. Now, the other thing too, Vista. Windows Vista Service Pack 1 is wreaking havoc on some PCs.
Windows Vista, yes.
Yes, I put my tongue back in. A day after it was released for public download, Windows Vista Service Pack 1 is drawing barbs from some computer users who say the software wrecks their systems.
Oh.
One particular person said, I downloaded it via Windows Update and got the blue screen on the third part of the update.
At no extra charge.
Oh, that's no good. That particular person was just dozens of posters complaining about Vista's Service Pack 1 on their PCs. Microsoft, beware. You've got to test these things before they roll them out. And that goes not just for Microsoft, goes for all software developers. You know, don't send something buggy out into the world because you get a really bad name, won't you?
Well, I mean, that's true. But in fairness to Microsoft, there are probably hundreds of thousands of different hardware configurations of systems out there, and they really, it's not possible to test against every possible combination of every different type of piece of hardware.
Yeah, but a blue screen of death is a pretty savage.
Well, it is, but look, you and I both know it doesn't take much, though. If you've got a strange model, a slightly left-of-center graphics card and something else a little bit different plugged in, and you've got an old SCSI card plugged in your system to support some odd bit of hardware.
SCSI, what's that?
System can't see it. It's the old one of the old types of bus types that you might have a scanner, flatbed scanner connected to, or...
Yep.
Something along those lines.
Then update your scanner. Don't go with a SCSI card.
No, exactly. And suddenly, splat, you'll
USB
put an update on.
Much faster.
That's it. And everything will, go to hell.
Handshakes. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Andrew McComb here this evening in the very intimate studios here this evening. And we'll be back with more just after this break.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron here on post-Easter edition of Tech Talk Radio for 2008. Dr. Ron, are you addicted to the internet?
As much as I'm addicted to anything, I think that, yes, I probably am. I'm addicted to being connected. I like being in touch.
Yeah, you feel somewhat disembodied, really, if that's the right word
for it. I thought
you
were going to say disemboweled then. No,
I wasn't going to go that way, but disembodied, when yes. You know, it's like having your left leg chopped off or your right arm chopped off.
Yeah, there's a certain level of anxiety.
When you can't just turn on the laptop
That's
or
right.
turn on the PDA and go, yes, I can get my mail.
You think you're going for a nice leisurely drive in the country to have a bit of a picnic lunch, but suddenly you're out of mobile range, you're out of internet range, and, the heart rate starts to creep up, doesn't
it? What do you think about this? This was in IT News just this week. Excessive gaming and email text messaging should be added to psychiatry's official guidebook of mental disorders, according to an article in the American Journal of Psychiatry.
Really?
Truly. Dr. Gerald J. Block, and anyone who spells his name with a J for Gerald.
Gerald with a J.
Yeah,
yep.
Gerald with a J. Outlined four distinctive symptoms displayed by sufferers.
Okay, let's see if we've got them.
Okay, withdrawal and an associated sense of anger or depression when users cannot reach a computer.
Anger or depression. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The constant need for better equipment and the feeling of social isolation and fatigue.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah. Well, they're all the signs of technological-related mental disorders.
Oh.
So, there you go.
Maybe I need to make an appointment to see my doctor.
Maybe you do. So, but I must admit, I quite enjoy turning it off and walking away from it for a couple of days. Because you feel really popular when you come back and you open up your webmail client and there's all this, where have you been? And 10,000 spams and,
you have to punch through a bit of a threshold, I find. If you're away, like I'm on holidays at the moment, I'm away from work for a couple of weeks and I find that after the first day, I'm starting to get fairly anxious, and day two, day three, I'm starting to really worry about what's going on at work. But after a few days, you just think, to hell with it. I'm not in touch. I'm deliberately going to make myself uncontactable. I'm going to have a break. I'm going to clear my brain.
Well, that's really good if you're not self-employed. Because when you're self-employed and you are the boss, one day off the beat means you could lose a job.
But haven't you got somebody you can leave to run the business while you have a holiday?
Oh, in theory, yes. Mm. In theory, yes, you do. But
you have to be able to trust them.
The problem is when you build relationships with your customers, as you probably do with yours, they get, you get to know them. And when they can't get through to you, well, hopefully there's a bit of loyalty there that kicks in. But yeah. Anyway, just getting back to our discussion here on mental disorders, which I find really quite fascinating. Dr. Block went on to say that attempts to measure the phenomenon are clouded by shame, denial, and minimization. Does that mean you click the minimize box?
I think it does. It means you minimize everything.
You minimize everything on your desktop as you walk.
I'm not sure what that means.
The conditions are difficult to treat because internet addiction is resistant to treatments. Well, really? You could just remove the laptop, or
you have to go
take your broadband
turkey,
car.
Don't you?
Yeah, it is very much like that.
Turn off the mobile. The mobile phone's a big one. See, I'm on holidays, but my mobile phone's still on.
That's right. It entails significant risks and has a high relapse rate. Well, of course it would have a high relapse rate.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, if that's your only vice, I don't think you've got too much to be worried about. You can get out and get a bit of exercise or something like that too. Dr. Block said that the problem is most acute in South Korea, where internet addiction is one of the country's most serious public health issues.
Huh.
Using data from 2006, the South Korean government estimates that approximately 210,000 South Korean children are affected and require treatment.
I can understand it being a health condition if it's stopping you from getting out, going, standing up, walking around, getting exercise, getting fresh air. I can see that that would lead to health problems, but in and of itself, I don't think it's a health problem.
South Korea set up a network of 140 tough love rehabilitation centres in 2006 in a bid to curb the growth of internet addiction amongst the country's teenage population. Let's take this a step further and just talk. I recently saw a program on SBS,
right,
which was talking about the youth of Japan with all the game consoles out, the Nintendo sort of, the Wiis and the small. Apparently, it brought it's created a generation of youth that loses the ability to communicate. They don't have their social skills because they've always got an ear plug in their ear listening to music, or they've always got a game console on their,
right.
And it's causing a whole, generation of recluses. And it's becoming, a lot of them end their lives for this very reason, because they don't know how to get a job. They just disappear down this great void.
It's very sad if technology is affecting your life in that way. Technology should be something that you've got at your disposal to use to make your life easier. It shouldn't actually take over.
You would think so. Mm. Anyway, if there's food for thought. Internet addiction classed as a mental disorder. I'm doing some work for the Mental Illness Fellowship of Victoria. I must ask them and see what their thoughts are on the case of is a mental illness an addiction. It'd be very interesting to find out, because there's a whole new world of customers just waiting for them, I would expect, if that's the case, because I do know a lot of people that are very much going to withdrawals if they can't get their IT fix for the day.
What do you do with your mobile phone when you go to bed at night?
Leave it somewhere. Normally in the car, if it's a weeknight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I tend to... I very rarely do I turn it off because it chirps and makes noises.
Yep.
But I leave it out of ear's range. It'll be in my, like, the office buried down the back of the house. Oh, okay. In the doghouse, if you're familiar with them, the doghouse.
Yep.
Sometimes I leave it in the...
It's the affectionate name for your office outside, the doghouse.
Yes, because I'm normally in it.
Yes.
Sometimes I tend to leave it in the car, which because it just chirps away. They're getting emails and things like that.
So you don't take it into the bedroom and leave it on the bedside table or under your pillow? Or?
No, but I've rung you on the odd occasion and you've answered the phone. Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, I often do. You've only got yourself to blame if you can't turn the damn thing off or put it somewhere like
a sign of addiction. I have to take my mobile phone, leave it switched on beside the bed.
Yes.
I mean, some people have they work in an environment where they're on call and they might get a phone call in the middle of the night, but if you're not in that situation, do you switch your phone off? Do you leave it on? Do you leave it down at the other end of the house? Does it come with you into the bathroom?
Crikey. Oh, no.
Some people go everywhere with them.
There is a little thing on the front of our website. I don't know whether you've seen it, the mobile phone addiction thing. There's been some funny ones come through there over the course of time, but you can actually dob someone in who has no idea of mobile phone etiquette. And one of the things is in relation to, do you take your mobile phone into the bathroom whilst you're powdering your nose?
Yeah.
Yes, I think everyone's probably sort of guilty at some stage.
What's that that joke about? So this is off the top of my head. There's a guy who goes in, he's in the public toilet, and he goes sits down in the toilet cubicle, and he hears somebody in the cubicle beside him say "g'day," and he goes, "Oh, I think so. This is a bit awkward." He says, "Hello," and the other person says, "So, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm sitting here on the toilet," and then the other person goes, "Oh, sorry, you're gonna have to say that again. There's some idiot beside me who keeps answering every time." Yes. I'll ring you back later. There's some idiot beside me who keeps responding to everything I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, very funny. I know we've got the Odd Spot and Gadget and Website of the Week coming up fairly shortly, but I must digress here just in the few moments we have before we go to the break. A royal pardon, this is a bit of an Odd Spotish thing. I had a bit of a chuckle as this when I was doing some research. A royal pardon frees a Moroccan Facebook user.
A royal pardon freeze. Okay, yep.
A Moroccan computer engineer jailed last month for setting up a Facebook account in the name of King Mohammed's brother.
Oh, no.
Has been freed after a royal pardon. Fawad, if I pronounce that correctly, I'm sure he's listening, Fawad Matada, who is 26 years of age, was jailed for 3 years and given a 10,000 dirham, which is around about $1,485 fine, last February for falsifying data and imitating Prince Moulay Rashid without his consent.
Facebook rage.
Facebook rage. Web rage, Facebook rage.
Your Facebook's looking pretty good at the moment too.
Pardon me, have I got one?
We all keep updating it every now and again.
Oh, yours?
No, yours.
Oh, mine. Yeah. Oh, have I got one?
Yeah, there's a communal one that everyone's got the password to.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
So you need to take control of your life, Andrew.
Oh, dear. On that note, I think we'll go to the break and we'll come back with the website, gadget and odd spot of the week.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
overstanding fingerprints.
Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
This house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Welcome to the Tech Talk Radio Easter Gadget. The Gadget of the Week is the Newmark IDJ2, which is a mixing desk. It's an audio console for an iPod.
Oh, really?
Now, DJs or disc jockeys will be familiar with iPod dock mixing desks, Andrew, but usually if you want to mix two tracks, you need either two iPod docks.
iMixer.
That's right. Or you need two desks. But Not anymore. With the Newmark iDJ2, this is the only iPod mixing console that provides for simultaneous playback and mixing of two tracks direct from one iPod. How good is that?
It's handy if you're a DJ and you're doing all the party things or whatever.
Isn't it great? It also provides
radio show,
full
podcast.
Yeah, that's it. Full control of your music with real-time scratching, as they say, with two jog wheels, a stunning colour screen, and Newmark's exclusive crate management.
I don't wish to show my age, but are the youth of today.
Users can also hook up multiple mass storage devices, including additional iPods, thumb drives, and external USB hard drives through rear panel USB ports. The iDJ2 also comes complete with line inputs for audio sources, including a microphone, CD players, and turntables. The RRP is $999.
Ooh.
And you can buy it online at www.spankrecords.com.au.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
That last address was not our website of the week. That's where
Spank
you,
what?
Spankrecords.com.au. That's where you buy the gadget. This week's website, however, Andrew, have you ever wanted to save that special text message in your phone? Or you
no.
might have a you might have 50 messages in your phone. They've
I'm
all got,
married, thanks.
Well, maybe. Well, this is the exact reason why you might want to save text messages.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I'm just trying to get you into trouble. This website for this week is www.treasuremytext.com. This website lets you forward messages from your mobile phone so they appear instantly in a web-based inbox. How good's that?
Yeah.
Messages yes. will never be lost or accidentally deleted when you change or upgrade phones, and there's no limit on storage, so you'll never run out of space. You can also use the service
not with SMS.
Not well.
128 characters or whatever you got, 160 characters?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. You're never going to run out, are you?
That's right.
You can also use the service to forward messages or send new messages for just 0.05 euros. What's that, 5 euro cents?
Oh, does it support any telcos here in Australia?
It has, looking from memory, looking at the website, there's three numbers, and I think we use a +44 number, which is a UK number.
Do we?
Being here, so you just SMS the or forward the message to that number, and it will appear in your inbox on this site.
Great.
How good's that? I reckon that's a great idea.
Well, that's good.
Dub.
Do you still get on your phone?
Do you still get, sorry?
You still get your SMS on your phone as well?
Yeah, or? Yeah, but if you want to save it, or you've got 50 there and you want to clear out your inbox, you can just tag them all and forward them all to this number.
Oh, okay.
And they go
I'll have to have a play.
Have
you've
a
got
play.
Me intrigued now.
There you go. www.treasuremytext.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
In an unprecedented experiment, a Japanese astronaut has thrown a boomerang in space and confirmed that it does in fact fly back, much like on Earth.
Did an EV thing or whatever they call it, an extra vehicle
activity,
and gave it a fling, didn't he?
Gave the boomerang a fling and back it came.
Nearly, how far did it
nearly
go?
Nearly took his helmet off. Astronaut Takeo Daoi threw a boomerang and saw it come back during his free time on March 18 at the International Space Station.
Oh, did he do it inside?
It was done... Hang on a minute. He threw the boomerang after a request from a compatriot, Yashiro Togai, a world boomerang champion. I was very surprised and moved to see that it flew the same way as it does on Earth. They must have done it outside. The space agency said a videotape of the experiment would likely be released later. Doi travelled on US Space Shuttle Endeavour on the March 11 blast-off and successfully delivered the first piece of a Japanese laboratory to the International Space Station.
Complete with a boomerang that came back in space.
He's taken a boomerang with him. Good on him.
It's good. I wonder when they're going to start doing other things like, you know, spears and cricket and footy. Yeah.
You need
a very big footy ground in zero gravity, I would have thought.
And apparently they've got sufficient free time to be able to do this sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. It's taxpayers' money at work. Big time. All right. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. I had the great pleasure of sharing the panel with Dr. Ron this evening. As the other guys have... yes, it is that Easter holiday time of the year. They all had their family commitments and things like that. So... when we return next week, we'll do it all again. So thank you to wherever you're listening to us, around the country, around the world. Keep up those emails, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, or you can phone our what is it, the voice line. I haven't had any there for a while, 1-300-664-882. SMS on 0430 582 077.
If you want to leave a message from outside of the country, plus 613 9012 5362.
And we have a forum. The forum's good. Go and visit that. Dr. Ron and Graham. I think more Graham maintains the forum.
Forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Share all your ideas and things like that.
Hmm.
Well, that's it. That's our Easter show for this year. It's been wonderful. And join us the same time, same station next week, where we'll be back with more of the same. We've got some good guests coming up too, fairly
more
shortly.
More shenanigans.
Got an audio guy coming in very shortly, Michael Kamean. You remember him?
Oh, yeah, remember Michael?
He mixes audio for television and cinema and stuff like that. He's going to tell us all about 5.1, get rid of all the myths.
What about 7.1?
I want to know about tell us about that.
And what's happening after 7.1.
And you know how you always think the TV ads are a little bit louder?
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not. Oh, but we'll tell you the tricks to the trade of how he actually does that. So, you know,
he can make it sound louder without actually having it louder.
Absolutely. A real audio engineer in the studio here talking to us about all sorts of things. That'll be coming up fairly shortly. We've also got some people talking about software for security and backups, just because Adam Turner's been, you know, talking about backups and all that recently.
He's been losing hair about his backups.
You're right. So join us next time on Tech Talk Radio. Until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.